decided to add some chaos. His words reminded me of the dream, and I found myself blurting without thought. "So, speaking of souls, what happened to mine?" Zirut shook his head. "No one was speaking of souls, and yours is the same speck of nothing that all dwellers carry around." By the time I turned away from him, Yale was in my face. Well, his chest was in my face.
"Why would you ask about your soul?" he demanded. "You wouldn't happen to be able to hear our thoughts now, would you, dweller?"
It wasn't really a question, more of an accusation. Clearing my throat and fighting for composure, I shook my head a few times. "No, definitely not. I just kind of went into Rome's head last night." The last lot was one big word I spoke as fast as I possibly could. Silence reigned supreme. Then Yale spun to face his crusher brother, with one eyebrow raised and a snarl on his lips. Rome didn't even flinch. I would totally have flinched. Maybe he could give me lessons. Something told me that I would need them. And by something, I meant the thousands of flinch-worthy glares that I'd already gotten since arriving in Blesswood.
"I would have told you if I had felt her there," he said,
his tone drawling like that much should have been obvious.
"Two clicks to the trials,"
Sirit reminded the room, and I was running out of time to get answers. Stepping forward, I snapped my fingers a few times in Yale's direction. "Hey, can you seriously focus for like one click? What the hell happened to my soul?" If he answered my damn question, we'd have a much better idea of why I was in his brother's head. It was clearly all connected. "What did Rau do to me?" The persuasive soul gracefully twisted in my direction, and part of me instantly regretted snapping my fingers at him. I'd seen some of the villagers do that to call the bolson up and always thought it looked like a nifty trick. Possibly, Yale wasn't fond of being called up like a wild beast. He stepped into me, and my eyes fell to his lips. Lips which were kissing me only last night. "No, Willa, no more kissing souls." That was probably a mantra I would have to repeat a few times. Couldn't quite get it to sneak in.
"Rau hit you with a curse that was designed for one of us. A powerful curse which was most likely intended to cause chaos. He wanted to shake up the natural order even more, giving himself more power, and thereby gathering enough power to find his beta."
Yale spoke matter-of-factly, but his eyes were ice-cold.
"The more powerful you are, the more you can sense the souls with the gift strong enough to ascend Utopia,"
Rome added.
"Or steal your godhood,"
Sirit chimed in. Yale growled low before picking up the conversation again.
"Yes, as I said, it's important that gods can sense these souls, and Rau has had that power stripped from him by Stavidi. He wants it back."
I tried to breathe around my confusion and panic. "So it was a curse meant for one of you guys, and it hit me. It splintered my soul, and now you all carry it inside. Like in your heart pocket or some crap."
"Heart pocket?
Really, Willa?" Sirit took pity on me.
"Souls aren't like a bag of tokens. It's not like some got slipped into our pockets when we weren't looking. Your energy, the essence of what makes you Willa, is now woven with the energy of each of us."
So, he was saying, "I'm never getting those parts of my soul back, am I?" I was not going to be able to demand that they simply empty their pockets and hand me my soul back. It was all mixed up with their messy-ass souls, getting tainted by the soulness of their stupid superior selves. A disembodied voice rang through Sirit's room then, sounding entirely robotic and sexless.
"Gods have arrived to the arena. All souls have one click to make it inside. This is mandatory."
The abcursus started moving. I noticed that Sirit was now dressed in his own pretty set of armor plates, black and gold to reflect his hair.
"Come on, Rox. We're going to the arena. You better haul ass to keep up."
I flopped around for a fraction of a click before wringing my hands. "Dwellers aren't allowed in the Sacred Sand Arena like this. I haven't even done my first cleaning shift there because you have to be trained and cleansed before you step into the halls of the gods." Sirit fitted his hands under my arms and hauled me out of the room. The abcurses were moving rapidly, ignoring my freakout.
"Guys!"
I tried to drag my feet, especially when I realized that I was still dressed in Cohen's huge clothes.
"Stop right now! Now! I'm not wearing my own clothes and my ass is literally hanging out! I can't go before the gods like this!"
"Close your eyes,"
Sirit whispered in my ear, and for some reason, I obeyed him. I almost suspected that he was channeling some of Yale's persuasion. Thankfully, he was still half carrying me down the hall, because walking with eyes closed for someone like me was not advisable. I felt the warmth of something caress my body, and figured it was the sunshine, as we stepped out the front door. But when I found my eyes flying open, we weren't quite there yet, which meant... I glanced down to find that my clothes had completely changed. The dress was made of deep purple, molding perfectly to my body, as though it had been made specifically for me. It felt like I had underwear on and everything. I could even see that my hair had somehow been tamed, curling obediently over my shoulders, the strands looking silky and shiny. Well, wasn't I a bit fancy right now? But how the heck had Sirit done that to me? Was it a trick or an illusion?
You shouldn't be wasting your energy like that, Trickery.
Yale's face was expressionless, his voice flat. His brother didn't bother to answer. He was focused on getting to the arena. A few more steps, and we were outside. The massive arena rose up into the distance, the last straggling souls disappearing through the huge entrance. I'd only ever seen it from the outside, so I was looking forward to checking out the rest of it. This was the place where the souls gathered every moon cycle to perform for the gods. This was where they wanted to be noticed. This was the place where future gods were discovered. The inside was as impressive as I had expected. A wide-open circular space with a multitude of obstacles and different flooring was the center and focal point of the entire building. Around it, on all sides, were staggered rows of chairs, which were right now filled with souls. All five Abcurses paused to stare at the end furthest from us, where there was a raised and glassed-off platform. The reflecting sun through the open panes of the rooftop made it hard to see into that boxed area, but it had to be where the gods were.
Come on. We need to take our seats,
Cohen muttered, leading us toward the empty seats that were very far away from the glass box, away from the gods, which was totally not normal soul behavior. From what I could see, the seats closest to the gods were packed with students of Blesswood. Dwellers stood around the perimeter, waiting to be called on for service, probably hoping that the gods would notice them, too. They were all dressed in their absolute best, the females in dresses, and the males in trousers and long shirts. I wondered if they'd still want the gods to notice them if they knew the uniform for the Jeffreys. The end we were heading toward was practically empty, even though it was the row closest to the actual arena. Those souls who hadn't managed to get a place close to the glass box all seemed to prefer the middle ring of seats. I had only a moment to wonder why, before the first souls were called into the sands, and then I realized several things at once. Firstly, souls were dangerous. Secondly, a sand floor easily absorbed blood and negated the need for a post-arena demonstration cleaning crew. And finally, the front row of seats was absolutely the worst row of seats. More than once, a soul was tossed right up against the flimsy wooden barrier that I sat behind. I hadn't actually been paying that much attention to the other souls of Blesswood until then. I hadn't bothered to even admire their slightly better-than-dweller appearances or their slightly bigger-than-dweller statures. But now I was noticing it all, and my slightly less-than-stellar coping mechanisms were kicking into gear, forcing my palms to sweat. In front of me, a male soul had a female soul pinned right up against the barrier. I could almost feel his snarling breath. I could almost feel the sharpness of the knife that he held against her throat. And then I could definitely feel the blood that splattered right over my face. "What the fuck?" I cried out, clambering right over the back of my seat, as the female soul's head lolled a little to the side, teetering as though it would fall right where my shoes had been tapping nervously against the ground. The male soul, the one with the knife, the one who had just almost beheaded his opponent right there in front of me, was now staring at me. I noted that he was still holding the bloody knife. That seemed important, but my frazzled brain couldn't seem to figure out why it was important.
Dweller.
He sounded surprised.
Are you lost?
Nope, I stammered. Meant to be here. I looked down, at the boy whose lap I had basically scrambled into. He had been sitting right behind me, in the row of seats reserved for intelligent souls who didn't want to get covered in blood.
Totally did that deliberately, I told him,
and Sabby, who was still staring at me. A single gong sounded, signaling the end of the match, and Stabby shrugged, though there was a frown on his face as he spun around and walked to the other end of the arena. He bowed before the glass box, as the other victors had, and then disappeared through a door leading down below the arena.
"Dweller?"
a male voice sounded, about a few inches away from my ear.
"You're still sitting on me."
I glanced down at the guy. Now that I paid attention, I noticed that he was actually taking up two of the seats. He was that big. I couldn't even tell if it was fat or muscle. He was just huge. Oh, and he was giving me a look. A what-the-hell-are-you-sitting-on-me-for look. "I can explain," I managed, slowly standing, my hands raised before me.
"We're waiting."
This had come from Sirid, who had been sitting to my left in the blood row. He was now twisted around, as were the others. He was smirking, clearly finding my awkward predicament funny. Even Eris was grinning, but the others weren't. A stormy expression had dropped over Rome's face. Maybe he didn't like other people being bigger than him. "Stabby got blood on me," I frowned. "And he killed that girl." I pointed to said girl, who was now being carried away by two of the dweller attendants.
"That's what happens,"
Yale muttered, reaching over the seat and hauling me back to the front row, forcing me down between him and Sirid.
"In these games, you either surrender or you die."
So why didn't she surrender? I crossed my arms over my chest, casting a quick look over my shoulder at Mountain Man. He was still frowning at me. I could feel it burning into the back of my head as I tried to ignore him. He was probably waiting for a formal dweller-style apology, or for me to drop and kiss his feet. Problem was, Yale still had a hand on my shoulder, forcing me to stay in my seat, so kissing Mountain Man's feet was going to be a problem.
"Maybe she thought she was strong enough,"
Cohen returned, from Yale's other side.
"Maybe she thought that she would become a god."
His voice was soft, but it had an edge of something malicious. It was almost like he knew that she wasn't strong enough, that she had died for nothing. And he liked that fact. Cohen was a little bit frightening.
"I'm next,"
Eris announced, jumping to his feet and launching himself over the wooden barrier without a backward glance. I looked up at the game master, a sole male standing beside the gong that sounded the beginning and ending of each match. He was set right beneath the glass box, probably so that the gods could whisper down to him whenever they wanted to see a particular soul perform. Sure enough, Eris's name was now glittering in flame above the game master's head, along with Tabitha, whoever that was. I watched with increasing trepidation as Eris sauntered out onto the center of the arena, standing there patiently, pretending that poor souls didn't get beheaded there on a regular basis. "Speaking of, if you guys die, does that mean I'll die too?" I spoke rapidly, uncaring which one of my soul stealers answered. Sirit laughed, loudly, as though he'd just heard the funniest joke ever. This sort of weird red haze descended across my vision, and I was about to launch myself headfirst into his face. I knew my head was hard, and it would have hurt if I hit him with it. Yale must have seen my intentions, because he wrapped an arm around my waist just as I launched.
"Calm down, Rox. Trickery is amused because there's no possible way a soul will ever take one of us down. None. So don't worry yourself about it."
"Yeah, sure. Don't worry your pretty head about it, Willa. It's just your life we're holding in our hands." My scowl swung to face Yale. "Don't think I didn't notice the deflection toward my actual question there. So either you know your death would kill me, or you have no idea, neither of which are comforting." Sirit's laughter was dying off, lucky for him, because I was still calculating the best angle to head charge him. Would totally be worth the headache. He spoke through the dying chuckles.
"We aren't easily killed. Don't you worry. And the simple fact is, we don't know what this means for any of us. Maybe you can't be killed now either. As in, until all six of us die, none of us can die. Or maybe there's still a piece of your soul inside you. It would make sense, seeing as you're able to feel emotions that are entirely your own, and you can easily make decisions for yourself."
Well, that would be a bonus, but knowing my luck? Doubtful. If there was only a little piece of me left, I'd almost definitely turn into a Jeffrey when I died. My attention was distracted then when Tabitha entered the arena. She was just a girl in simple fighting gear, striding out from the door leading below the arena. There was probably a dweller running down there to fetch souls when they were called. I couldn't see her properly from where I sat, but she looked beautiful and badass, her hair braided down her back, her scowl in place. She walked over to Eris, and then attacked, right when I thought that she was going to say, "Hi, how's it going?" or some other kind of casual greeting. He flung out an arm as she pounced at him, so quickly that I would have missed it if the girl hadn't run right into it. He caught her right at her neck, sending her feet flying out from beneath her, sand spraying, and flipping her up. His other hand seemed to push against her face as she was falling, sending her toward the ground much faster than she would have fallen on her own. She collided with the sand so roughly that her body actually seemed to bounce, and then she wasn't moving at all. Eris started walking back to us as the gong sounded. I supposed that an opponent falling unconscious would be considered a surrender, which was a good thing. I wasn't exactly a spokesperson for the souls, but I was happy that there were alternatives to beheading. I knew both Yale and Sirit had smug grins on their faces, like they were saying mentally, "I told you so." Eris climbed over the barrier and sat down beside Sirit, looking completely bored. I leaned over Sirit, peering at him. "Why'd they pair you with a girl?" He turned away from the sand, his eyes finding mine, his unease creasing fine lines between his brows.
"The gods are always hoping that I'll use my gift to win a fight."
How would that even work? I was thoroughly confused, and a little too aware of the hand that Sirit had dropped over my back. Eris leaned forward, bringing his face close to mine.
"I could have distracted her with desire," he muttered,
his eyes flicking between mine.
"And then she would have let me close to her."
He reached out, his fingers winding around the back of my neck.
"She would beg me to kiss her, because I would make her. I would make it all that she could think about."
His power trickled through me, nothing like the debilitating need that he was describing, but enough to convince me that he was telling the truth. I bit down on my lip, trying not to do something stupid, like moan.
"And then?"
I couldn't help that my voice rasped a little bit.
"And then I would snap her neck,"
he said silkily, his fingers tightening on me. I drew back, wrenching myself from his spell, and he allowed me. Sirit's hand flew away from my back, and I turned to the arena numbly, my emotions running rampant. "Holy shit."
"Language,"
Sirit chastised. "Fuck you." I narrowed my eyes at him. He grinned.
"You have a dirty mind, soldier."
"I'm up."
Yale's deep voice cut through the moment, drawing all of our eyes back to the Game Master as the persuasive Abkurs launched himself over the barrier. His name was there, in flame. I didn't even bother looking at the other name. What did it matter? They wouldn't last. Not against Yale. Not against any of the Abkurses. Part of me understood why Sirit had laughed at me before. My guys weren't normal. They were something else. Not my guys. Just guys. Some random guys. Some random, weird, annoying guys.
"Are you insulting us inside your head again, Rox?"
Rome asked through a yawn, standing and plonking himself into Yale's vacated seat, his massive hand falling to my knee. I stared at his hand, and then at his face. He didn't even seem to be needing a response. He was watching his brother, who was standing out in the middle of the arena as Eris had. "Nope," I lied. "I have other friends that I insult inside my head, you know." He turned, finally focusing his full attention on me. The glittering, gem-like green of his irises darkened with his focus, making my seat a pretty frightening seat to be sitting in right then.
"We're not your friends," he told me blatantly.
"Your hand is on my leg," I shot back, not even missing a beat. They were so my friends. On my other side, Sirit snorted on a laugh. Rome didn't look at his hand, which apparently had a mind of its own, but I could feel his fingers tightening. They could reach all the way around my leg, his fingers brushing on the other side. If he squeezed, everything from the knee down would probably pop right off. "Enemies don't put their hands on their enemies' legs," I pushed, holding his stare. His jaw shifted, like he was grinding his teeth. I tried to edge my leg out from beneath his death grip, but it only tightened further, pulling until I was dragged across the seat and pressed right up against his body.
"I never said that we were enemies,"
he finally answered.
We're just not friends.
Okay. So he was annoyed about the fact that my sneaky little soul had kind of chained itself to his. I could understand that. I mean, friends were supposed to have boundaries. That definitely crossed a line. Okay. I nodded, leaning my head against his arm, which was about as comfortable as a rock. If he was going to force me to sit on the edge of my seat, he might as well give me something to lean against. I grumbled as I turned back to watch the other contestant finally emerge from the room below the arena. He was a big guy, dragging an even bigger sword behind him. When he drew near Yale, he looked pissed. Probably because they were forcing him to fight Yale. I'd be pissed too. He raised his sword as the gong sounded, and then tried to strike before Yale could speak. But it was no use. In half a click, he was laying the sword back down and stripping off his clothes. He ran toward the barrier, climbed over, and started running naked through the rows of laughing souls. Eventually, he ran right into a wooden post and then fell down, unconscious. Apparently, Yale had grown tired of humiliating him. The gathered souls cheered and laughed, louder than they had for any other fight, and Yale smirked, delivering them a bow before walking back to us.
I'll be next, Sirit predicted,
as Yale pulled himself over the barrier and flopped carelessly down into Rome's old seat. How do you know that? I asked.
They always pick us like that. Eris first, to test the waters. If Eris doesn't use his gift, they pick Yale. If Yale takes too long to end his fight, they pick me. If my fight isn't a real fight, they pick Cohen. If Cohen doesn't kill his opponent, they pick Rome. If Rome doesn't draw blood, they do it all over again. One of us after another until they get what they want.
I blinked, looking from one of their faces to the other. They all looked kind of angry, but tired at the same time. Resigned to the fact. They couldn't disobey the gods on everything, it seemed. Otherwise, they wouldn't have even walked into the arena that morning. Chapter 13. Sirit was right. The gods were apparently the predictable sort of assholes in that they liked the same torture over and over again. Sirit didn't bother with trickery in his fight. He smashed his fist through the face of a lean, dark-haired soul, rendering him unconscious with one blow. There was not an iota of expression on his face as he stared up at the glassed box of gods, and I wondered if he knew who was there this moon cycle. Which god had bothered to come and view the arena battles? Which god was requesting him? And scowling when he didn't deliver what was expected. I supposed it didn't really matter, unless it was Rau. I would have liked to get my hands on him, except that he would probably hit me with another curse, and I'd turn into a rodent, and then my little rodent soul would explode and attach onto a bunch more people. It would be better if Rome got his hands on Rau. He had huge hands. Hopefully he'd be able to just crush the god into dust.
Heavy thoughts there, Rox.
I miss Sirit making his way across the arena and back into the seat beside me. How do you kill a god? I blurted out. And in a flash, Sirit's hand was across my mouth. He leaned in very close until his lips were almost touching the hand wrapped around my face.
Don't provoke them. Don't think about killing them. They'll destroy you without thought. You leave Rau to us. We'll discuss his chaos.
My reply was mumbled against his skin, my tongue flicking out to wet my lips before I remembered that was impossible. I kind of licked his hand instead. Sirit's eyes went the stormy green color as he slowly slid the hand from my mouth and let it curve around the back of my neck.
How the hell have you stayed alive this long?
He asked. I shrugged, trying to catch my breath. No idea. It's been a rough road. I heard his muttered,
I'll bet,
before he turned back to watch the next round of battles. Cohen's name flashed up in the fire sign. No surprise there. The real surprise was in the next name to flash up. Willa Knight. Dweller. I always did want to see my name in lights, but not exactly like this. I think it took me a few clicks to register that my name had appeared on the arena board. The Game Master, along with most of the crowd, were all staring at the fiery sign, completely dumbfounded.
Well, looks like the gods decided to play a different game this moon cycle, Sirit noted.
He looked like he didn't know whether to be angry or amused. He settled on cringing. Cohen was sitting as still as anything in his chair. My frantic eyes searched him out,
hoping he would have some answers about making this work. Finally, he turned to face me, and I wasn't sure what to make of his blank gaze. He got to his feet, and in one leap was over the barrier, landing in the arena below. I wanted to scream or cry. There was no plan, and I sure as hell couldn't fight Cohen. He would destroy me. The gods were probably hoping that he would, that his need for pain would kick in and he would reduce me into nothing more than spilled blood and guts. Strong arms wrapped around me, and I half shrieked when I was lifted from my seat. Rome's arms were surprisingly gentle as he lifted me up over the barrier. My eyes sought out Sirit, who was standing beside his brother. Actually, all of the Abcurses were on their feet. None of them looked happy.
"You have no choice but to go in there and do your best,"
Sirit told me, his voice projected so lowly that it barely carried to me. Yale leaned close and added,
"Cohen will make sure that it ends quickly. Just don't fight him."
Before I could reply with the expletive they deserved, Rome let me go. I was too scared to scream as I fell to the arena below. I braced myself for impact, but instead of hitting the sand, I was caught by another set of strong arms, and then set onto my feet. I immediately stepped back to add some space between us, raising my fists hesitantly, just in case I needed to punch Cohen or something.
"I got you, Willa."
His deep voice wrapped around me, smooth and warm, like a silk-lined cloak. He strode out into the center of the arena, and I knew that I was supposed to follow him. The only problem was, that would require my feet to move, and right now they were glued to the spot. My body shook, as the faces of so many souls and dwellers seemed to swell all around me, their stares bearing down on me. I couldn't stop myself from glancing up over my shoulder. All of the Abcurses remained standing, pressed close to the barrier. My eyes drifted around the stadium seating, and I realized that a lot of souls were standing. Some of them looked intrigued. Maybe this was just some elaborate way of poking fun at the souls who were all so desperate to please the gods. Dweller blood spilling onto the super-absorbent sacred soul-fighting sands. That was the stuff of their nightmares. Mine too, if I were to be honest. I glanced down at my fancy dress, cringing. I had loved the fact that it had the appearance of being made to fit me exactly. But that was before I had known that I would be fighting for my life in it. Or at least pretending to fight for my life. We were pretending, weren't we? Finally, I managed to stumble my way across to stand before Cohen, grateful that Sirit had given me boots and not heels. The pain-gifted soul was back to stoic, no emotions to clue me in to what he was going to do. Yale's words were painfully strong in my head. "Don't fight him." Of course, that was easier said than done when a huge-ass soul was heading straight for you. Cohen moved fast, like the rest of the Abcurses, but I'd been around them constantly for almost half a dozen sun cycles now. I had been expecting the strike, and somehow, on instinct, I dodged it. My mind swam at the realization that I had moved almost as fast as Cohen, and I didn't trip doing it. He tilted his head to the side, and the slightest of sparks lit up his eyes, along with a smirk on his lips. Great. I'd just made this a fun game for him, which meant that it was going to be the very opposite of a fun game for me. Time for Plan B. Before he could move, I ran. I sprinted. All the way across the arena, pulling up the skirt of the dress as I went. I aimed for the side that had a small step popping up into the stands. I sensed him behind me, but I didn't hesitate or glance back, since both actions would cost me precious time. I reached the first step, and without even hesitating, I hit it hard and launched myself as high as I could onto the side of the barrier. There were slots in the higher sections, and I needed to reach those to be able to hold on. My fingers scrambled against the wood. I felt slivers cut into me, but I ignored the pain and managed to hook my hands into some holds and pull myself so that my feet were resting on one of the slots. Turning, I held on with both hands above my head, not at all surprised to see Cohen standing below, waiting for me.
"You let me get away, didn't you?"
My question was breathy, an annoyance dripped from my tone. Running wasn't my thing. He grinned, and this time it seemed real. He was either laughing at me or with me. Either way, I definitely amused him.
"Come on, Dweller Baby. Where do you think you're going from there? You can't climb out, so get your ass back down here and submit to me."
I coughed a few times, my cheeks turning pink. It definitely was because of all the running. You mean surrender, right? Get my ass back down there and surrender? Cohen's laughter was deep and rumbly. It managed to caress my body in places which should not have been reacting in a situation like this.
I always say what I mean. You should have figured that out by now.
Narrowing my eyes on him, I squeezed my hands even tighter on their holds, worried I was about to slip.
I will never submit to you, one. Never.
So you might as well walk away now, because I will literally hang here until nightfall if I have to.
Yeah, right.
Even as I spoke, my hands were losing their grip. I was such a liar. And an idiot. I needed to learn when to give up and cut my losses. Of course, none of that mattered when it came to those super souls. Cohen leapt toward me. So quickly I barely even tracked his movements, and before I could open my mouth to shout, he was behind me, his hand grasping the top of the barrier above my head.
Love it when they run,
he half-whispered, half-grunted beside my ear. And then his arm was winding around me, and he was pulling me away from the barrier. I would have screamed as my hands were wrenched out of their hold, and we started falling backwards. But we fell much faster than I would have on my own, and Cohen was landing square on his feet before the scream had a chance to gather up any momentum. I broke away from him as soon as our feet were on the ground, and we faced each other, both of us taking short, measured steps. Him forwards, and me backwards. Until I stepped on the train of my dress and almost fell on my ass.
Wait,
I pleaded, surprised when he actually stopped moving. I bent over, grabbing the hem of the dress and attempting to rip it, needing a little more room to move. Typically, it didn't bulge, and Cohen grew tired of waiting. He was before me in a click, forcing me back to my feet as he leaned in close.
Time's up,
he announced, a small smirk in place. His hands dropped onto my shoulders, sliding down to rest against my chest. The dress didn't have much of a covering above the bodice, so his palms almost seemed to slide against my bare skin through the thin mesh-like material, raising goosebumps all along my body. I tried not to hyperventilate, but I knew that my breathing had changed. He didn't have his hands on my boobs, but I could still feel the swell of them, right above the top of the dress, pushing against his palms with each sudden sharp breath. His massive fingers curled around my shoulders, digging in a little as his eyes darkened. The sparkling tendrils of weirdly addictive pain he'd used on me previously began running across my body again, only this time they were a million times stronger. It was like he was sticking hot needles into my skin, but the needles were coated in some kind of potion that just made me feel good. It was amazing that he could do that. But it seemed that the more he used his power, the more it began to resemble pain. The pleasure was still there, but the agony started to peek through, whispering against my bones and making me cringe. I whimpered out a protest, even as my body arched into him, reacting to the way his cloudy eyes were staring down at me. He dropped one of his hands to wrap tightly around my spine.
Your fight is the thing which sets you apart from other dwellers,
he whispered into my ear as he held my trembling body.
But you have to learn to recognize when you can't win.
Oh no, he didn't. I grabbed my skirt again, but I moved deliberately slowly this time, keeping myself pressed against him. I bunched it up into my hands, inch by inch, as his eyes flickered from my face, watching as the material climbed higher up my legs.
Dweller,
he ground out. For just a moment, unadulterated pain flashed through me, but as quickly as it happened, it was gone, leaving only an echo of it for me to react to. Cohen blinked rapidly, once, twice, and then his gaze was back on my face. I had broken his concentration. Willa for the win. He frowned, obviously hearing that thought, but it was too late for him. My dress was up high enough now. What was that thing you said before? I asked, as the gathered souls began to grow impatient, shouting things at us.
You have to learn to recognize when you can't.
I swung my knee up into his balls. His breath rushed from him, and he stumbled back, his hands falling away from me.
Whoops.
I had intended to knee him. I just hadn't intended to knee him there. I froze at the newly tinted green of his eyes, and in that moment, I was pretty sure that I was seeing death. Cohen wasn't a pain-gifted soul at all. He was death. I held up both hands.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I was backing up, my hands still above me. The crowds were noisy around us now, and even though I never planned on it, I decided to surrender. Just as I opened my mouth to shout it out, a zap of energy shot through me, and no sound emerged from my mouth. I tried again as Cohen stalked toward me. He had recovered in a mere moment, which didn't seem fair. I'd never get away with another underhanded shot like that again. It should have at least given me 2 clicks reprieve. I tried for a third time to speak, and still no sound emerged. My eyes flicked across to the glass box, and I just knew one of those assholes had done something to me. They wanted to see what Cohen could do, how far he would go. Whether he hurt me or not. Whether he would kill me or not. I, on the other hand, didn't want to see what Cohen would do at all. That wasn't the kind of knowledge that I required. I would have happily flounced right out of the arena, shaved off all my hair, and slipped into the unassuming role of Will Knight, sans obvious nipples, to hide from the gods. But I couldn't do that, because the guys felt some kind of obligation to the gods, or the gods had some kind of control over them, and I felt some kind of obligation to the Abcurses, or they had some kind of control over me. Really, obligation and control were becoming more or less synonymous to me. And there was one more tiny little thing. The gods were cheating. They were taking away my ability to surrender, and that was unfair. That made me mad. I stopped backing away from Cohen, blinking as though I was about to start bawling like a little girl. He totally bought it. Idiot Abcurse. He frowned, some of the danger edging out of his walk as he approached me. I dropped to my knees, my hands tangling in the sand. I was really milking it.
As much as I like this, Cohen's voice rumbled, his hand in my hair. You actually need to say that you surrender.
For just a few weak moments, I flirted with the fact that I didn't have the strength of will to resist Cohen and his deep, rumbling voice. I considered that I wanted to be on my knees before him and... But no. Nope. I was Willa freaking Knight. Badass extraordinaire. Best dweller in the world. And I was going to attempt to kick the ass of the massive pain soul, even if it was the last thing I did. Take this, I shouted. Or mouthed, more like. But my point was still made. I tossed the sand into his face, surging to my feet and running away from him. Before I could figure out a plan, a huge body slammed into me and lifted me up to drive us across the arena, all the way to the barrier where the Abcurses still stood. My back slammed against the wall. It was hard and hurt a little, but nothing like it would have if Cohen had used all of his muscle. His breath washed against my cheek, and I went a little dizzy at the woodsy, fresh-cut pine scent he had going on. I could feel his body trembling. He was on the brink of losing control, and I couldn't even open my mouth to try and save myself. Instead, I tossed my arms around his neck, plastering myself to him in a fierce hug. I might have been a terrible fighter, but I was a stellar hugger, one of the best. When I drew back, Cohen's stone-chip eyes locked onto mine, like a predator to his prey, and I could feel the faint vibration of his growl as it passed from his chest to mine. Instinct took over, and I leaned closer to snuggle my face into that spot between his shoulder and neck. His body shuddered beneath mine, the hands on my back tightening.
You have to surrender, Rox. I can't stop until you do.
There was pleading in his voice, and as I pulled back, I opened my mouth and closed it just as quickly, before shaking my head. I put my hand on my throat to tell him that I couldn't surrender, even if I wanted to.
Can't speak.
More than one growl sounded from around me then, and I knew that the other brothers had heard my thought. Cohen swung around us so that he could glare up at the glass box, and then his voice slipped out into the air around us.
Close your eyes.
Our stare held for an eternity, and I was relieved to see that he was as unhappy about what was happening as I was. I gave him a quick head nod and closed my eyes, mostly trusting that I would make it through this. My feet gently hit the sand as Cohen took my face into both of his hands. The tingling pain started quickly and increasing to the point where I wanted to cry out, but thankfully, with a snap of energy, darkness took me. When I woke up, there was pain everywhere, but most of it was focused around the area of my chest. I struggled to pull myself into a sitting position, peering cautiously around at the stone room. It looked like some kind of dungeon, with bare stone benches and a barred door, which had thankfully been kept open. I groaned, doubling over and clenching my stomach. The abcurses were near, but they were stretching me out, taking the distance right to the edge of what I could bear. I slipped off the bench, my head swimming dizzily, and padded toward the door on shaky legs. "Fuck the gods," I muttered, just to make sure that my power of speech had returned. It had. Check that off. I was also still in possession of every single one of my limbs, which I considered a feat, seeing as I had just jumped into the sacred sand arena to face off against Cohen Abcurse, Painmaster of Blesswood. "Fuck the gods," I said again, a little louder this time, just double-checking. "Fuck the fucking gods," I screamed. I had no excuse for that one. It just felt good.
"We get it,"
a familiar voice noted dryly.
"You're a little angry."
"Emmy?" I blinked at my best friend as she came into view, walking down the stone corridor toward me. "Am I in a dweller dungeon?"
"No."
She reached me, pulling me into a fierce hug.
"You're below the arena. Addy was attending the Sun Cycle, and he came and got me when they called you onto the sands. He said you might need some clothes."
"Are the gods still here?" I asked as she set me back, running her eyes over me critically before handing me a bunch of cloth. I looked both ways down the hall before struggling out of the ruined dress and pulling on the clothes that she had brought for me. A pair of shorts and a shirt. They were the plain sort of clothes that I'd run around in back at the village. She must have found them in my backpack. The souls didn't wear these sorts of clothes, especially not the shorts. But the village dwellers often had to overcompensate for the heat and the lack of cooling methods with sparse clothing.
"I have no idea. They rarely ever show themselves anyway. What the hell have you done, Willa? Why the hell have they singled you out? Do they know that you snuck into Topia?"
She lowered her voice for that last part, eyes darting around as if she expected some of the robed Bolson balls to just pop into existence down here. I opened my mouth, closing it again. "I have no idea. Maybe this is Ra'u. He seemed to be really angry at the abcurses, and they told him that I was Cohen's plaything, that Cohen was fond of me or something weird like that. So maybe this had nothing to do with me. Maybe this was just a punishment for Cohen." Emmy's frown deepened, her eyes sparking with warring concern and anger. If I didn't know her for the goody soul lover that she was, I would have thought that she was actually pissed at Cohen and the others for bringing me into the middle of a god battle.
"They got called up there," she said gently, her voice almost resigned. "All five of them."
"To the god box?"
"Yeah."
"I'm going up there," I announced, striding past her.
"And how did I know you would say that?"
She set off after me, able to keep pace with me far too easily for my fragile ego. "Because you're secretly a rebel, and your mind works just like mine?" She snorted, which I took for a no.
"I'm glad you're okay, Will. I was terrified. I thought Cohen would kill you. I feel like your bad luck has gotten so much worse since we arrived here."
"Nah." I shook my head, peering up a few different stone staircases, trying to figure out which was the way back up. "We're friends now, even if they won't admit it. And I've only stabbed one person since we came here. One! I mean, yeah, it was a god, but still, Cohen wouldn't kill me."
"I came to the closet early this morning to check up on you, but you weren't in there. I assumed you told them everything."
"I didn't have much of a choice. Five let me sleep in his room."
"Five?"
"Sirit. Trickery. The one who's always kind of smirking."
"Five as in dorm number five?"
I finally found the right staircase, with no help from Emmy, and grabbed her hand to drag her after me, which was a nice reversal of sisterly roles.
"You're so smart. Why can't all people be as smart as you?" "Most people are."
"Does that make me dumb?" I asked, faking an offended tone.
"It makes you special,"
she teased, squeezing my hand and taking the lead, because I was definitely floundering all of a sudden. So many hallways, barely any light. Plus, my legs were sore, so I kept trying to avoid stairs, which was stupid because we needed to go up. Eventually, the pain in my chest began to lighten, and my body seemed to naturally turn in the direction of the abcurses, intent on delivering me straight to them. They would have loved that. I needed to make sure they never found out. I had planned on reaching the room and planting myself outside, sticking my ear to a wall or notching the door open just enough to hear things clearly. I had hoped that both the gods and the Abcurses would decide to utilize their apparently private moment to spill all of their secrets, and that those secrets wouldn't be harmful to me in any way, shape, or form. Willa Knight's involvement in all of this is just a random accident. Yeah, that's what they were going to say. Wait, no. Who is Willa Knight? That was better. They wouldn't even know my name. That dweller we made you fight? You're crazy. That sign was supposed to say Willis Ninny, silly Abcurses. I was so happy about what I was expecting to hear that I barely even noticed the door in front of me opening. I stopped when I caught sight of Eris, who exited the room followed by Yale, Sirit, Cohen, and then Rome. They all lined up, facing me, and Rome shut the door firmly behind him, not admitting any more people into the hallway. Oh, hey! I scuffed my shoe against the carpet. Fancy seeing you guys here. You all done with the secret meeting?
We heard you,
Yale announced, flicking his eyes to Emmy for a moment before returning them to me. Oh, right. They heard my thoughts. Oh, shit. Why didn't I think of that?
You're still doing it,
Eris added, walking over to me, grabbing me by the hips and swinging me over his shoulder.
Bye, Dweller.
He strode past Emmy, and the guys started to follow. I pulled my head up, giving Emmy a hopeless look. She waved me away, obviously aware that I couldn't physically separate myself from them, even if I had wanted to. But there was still a kind of despair written all over her face as she watched me being carried away. I thought about what I would have done in her position, and I cringed a little bit. I would have been kicking some soul ass. Attempting. I would have been attempting to kick some soul ass. Maybe she was thinking that this was out of her hands now. That I was out of her hands now. She couldn't protect me anymore. Maybe in time she would be thanking the Abcurses. Probably around the same time as the Abcurses started begging her to take me back under her wing. I was a pain in the ass to look after, and Emmy had big things ahead of her. She had a glamorous dweller career, and an honorable future. I didn't have any of that. I had, well, shit. I was probably going to be a Jeffrey, but I didn't want to dwell on that. Not right now. Not when Eris's hand was splayed over the back of my thigh, because if there was anyone who had the power to distract you from unpleasant thoughts, it was the golden, seduction-gifted soul. I can walk, I told him, tapping on his back. He pulled me back, his arm tightened across my back before my feet could hit the ground.
Sure you can,
he muttered, his golden eyes falling over my face.
You okay?
Sure I am, I grinned. I got to fight Pain Master One, and I'm pretty sure I almost won. I totally almost won.
Not even close, he laughed. But I'll give you a participation award, minus a few points for the ball shot. That was a little unfair, don't you think?
Nah. I looped my arms around Eris's neck, cuddling closer and notching my chin against his shoulder. I really wanted to wrap my legs around him again. But I supposed I had learnt at least half of a lesson last time. I didn't think they realized how awkward it was for me to just hang like that, with my legs dangling. The others were still walking behind Eris, so I was able to cast my eyes over them now. None of them looked hurt. Or happy. Or angry. Or any emotion, really. Why did they call you up to the god box? I finally asked, my eyes coming to a rest on Cohen. I figured he owed me more than the others, on account of making me pass out and everything.
They didn't, Cohen grunted. We called ourselves up.
Oh, what for?
To find out why the hell they made me fight a dweller.
And?
Do all dwellers ask as many questions?
Rome muttered. And? I pressed.
And it was Raoul,
Yale answered, sounding bored.
Trying to mess with Cohen. Nothing serious, nothing to worry about.
Except that every soul at the Academy is going to hate you now,
Sirit added. Why? I groaned. It wasn't actually a question, more like a lament. Why did this shit have to happen to me?
You can stop asking questions now, Rum grumbled. My head hurts, and I feel like breaking something.
A little questioning never hurt anybody, I protested half-heartedly. I didn't actually want to fight with Rome. But there was a stubborn switch inside my mind that seemed to be stuck in the on position.
Seduction,
Rome snapped.
Do something about her.
You could just ask me nicely, I demanded, as Eris secured his arm more tightly around my back, his free hand coming to rest on my thigh again. He maneuvered my leg, drawing it around his waist, allowing me to wrap my legs around him properly. I was a little bit distracted, especially when his hand gripped my ass to hold me up, especially when a rush of feeling flooded through me that was far too strong to be anything but magic. I tightened my whole body around him, my head falling into his neck, my teeth sinking into his skin. I was mostly just trying not to whimper or anything pathetic or girly like that, but I supposed I also wanted a little bit of revenge. He stumbled, and then stopped walking, a light groan sounding in my ear.
"Did she just bite you?"
Rome's face was suddenly right in front of mine, his fingers threading into my hair and lifting my head from Eris's neck.
"Yes,"
Eris gritted out.
"She's like a wild animal,"
Rome muttered, his glittering eyes locked onto mine.
"Every single time you poke her, she fights back."
"She can hear you," I said.
"Give her to me,"
Rome demanded. Since he was still staring at me so intensely, I actually thought he was talking to me.
"Fuck off, strength,"
Eris growled, moving forward so that Rome was forced to release me, my hair tangling in his fingers and forming a brief bridge between us before it fell over my eyes. I quickly pushed it off, and by then, Rome was already back in my face. He reached over Eris, hooking his hands beneath my arms and hauling me up and over Eris, who spun around, looking pissed.
"Whoa!"
I tossed my arms up as my feet hit the ground, trying to separate the two of them. "I get that all the arena fighting probably has your adrenaline pumping, and you're itching to get into another fight right now, but if you..." My pitiful pacification attempts died off, as the breath was literally crushed right from my chest. Eris had advanced on Rome, and the both of them seemed to have forgotten that a dweller stood right between them. Someone grabbed my shirt, wrenching me free and ripping the material in the process. That someone had been Yale. He shook his head at me, put a finger to my lips, and started dragging me away. Siren and Cohen were busy trying to wrench Eris and Rome apart. When we were clear of the others, I expected Yale to stop walking, maybe to give me a lecture too. But his pace only increased. "Where are we going?" I asked, my breath surprisingly steady as I tried to keep up. "Huh, that was weird."
"That wasn't normal,"
Yale muttered thoughtfully, causing me to look up at him in surprise.
"Roman Eris,"
he clarified, reading the question in my eyes.
"They don't normally fight like that. Or, well, ever, really. Something is going on. That looked like chaos at work. Rao is messing with you. I need to know why."
"Good news, then." He chuckled, some of the tension easing from his stunning face.
"Don't worry, Willa. I won't let anything happen to you. We liked you before because you're so abnormal. It's actually somehow funny. But now, after seeing you take on Cohen like that, well, yeah, now we're keeping you. It's final."
Warmth bubbled inside my chest, happiness almost exploding out of my body, but I quickly smothered it. "I'm not a toy." I figured he needed reminding. "You can't just keep me to play with whenever you want."
"We can if you don't run away."
"Why the hell would I run away?"
"Exactly, Willatoy."
"Now you're just being mean," I accused, a frown on my face. He grinned, casting a sideways look at me.
"I'd make it up to you, but I don't want to start fighting with my brothers just yet. Maybe later."
"What a dick."
"Now you're just being mean," he laughed.
Chapter 14. Yale led me back into the main part of Blesswood and up to the dining area. It was time for breakfast, and I realized that I was starving. Fighting a soul and being knocked unconscious does that to a girl. As we walked the long hall toward the double doors, I turned my head to look back a few times. No other ab curses were in sight. "Roman Eris, are they okay?" I asked. "They're not going to actually beat each other up, right?" Somehow, I thought Yale would know. I was relieved that he didn't seem to be concerned, but it was hard to read him. It always had been. He kept his emotions tightly bound. Unless, of course, he was being competitive and losing or something.
"They'll be fine. They just need a little distance from you."
I snorted. "Nice. That's just what every girl likes to hear." Yale slowed his walk and faced me fully, his eyes glinting in the well-lit hall.
You're coming into a group of gifted beings, Willa. Not your average friendship. One girl and five men? You're going to have to get used to that dynamic causing some problems. Especially while we're all riding the wave of whatever curse Rau hit you with.
Five? Holy crap, he was right. That was a hell of a lot of guys to have in my life. And yet, I almost couldn't imagine them not being there. Like, they had always been a part of me, and the sun cycles before were nothing more than a dream. If my soul is split five ways, how come I only have to be with one of you and not all of you? I had this thought earlier, but there never seemed to be enough time to voice every question that crossed my mind. Yale's face went blank, very carefully blank. I knew then that he had an idea of why that was, but he wasn't going to tell me about it. Instead, he turned and pushed back the double doors to the dining hall. Up until now, we hadn't seen that many other Blesswood students. Most of them had long ago left the Sacred Sand Arena. Of course, they had left the arena to come to the dining hall, a hall I was now standing in the doorway of with thousands of glares shooting in my direction. Yale strolled in like he didn't have a care in the world, heading for their usual table, which was always empty and waiting for them.
Come on, Willatoy. It's time for us to eat. I'm starving.
I backed up and out of the room. No way in hell was I walking in there. Even though Yale was hardcore as all hell, he could not take on 1,000 souls if they decided to tear me limb from limb. I liked my limbs right where they were. The double doors closed in front of my face, and the pace of my breathing began to speed up, in and out, in and out, the air shuddering past my lips. I couldn't do this. The gods were going to mess everything up, and there was a high possibility that someone was going to get hurt. What if it wasn't just me? What if Emmy or one of the Abcurses were caught in the crossfire? The ache in my chest was present again. Yale wasn't close enough to me now, and my stupid broken soul was letting me know. Plus, I was still backing up. Fear had my feet moving before the reasonable side of my brain could catch up. Of course, there was one problem. Backing up meant that I wasn't looking where I was going. Thin, graceful arms wrapped around my middle, and before I could call for help, a ball of material was shoved in my mouth, and a heavy cloth dropped over my eyes. Darkness shrouded most of my senses, and I fought against whoever held me. They were far too strong for my struggling, and more than one set of hands grabbed me as they moved away. I heard shouts, more than a few, actually, but a stern and familiar voice shut them down quickly. Elowyn. Holy crap! The Dweller Relations Committee had just kidnapped me! No need to worry about the rest of Blesswood. This was the moment that I turned into Bolson fodder. Yale! I screamed for him through our mental link. He was the closest, with the best chance of reaching me. My concentration felt a little shaky, though, probably because the pain in my chest was threatening to tear me apart. After a few more hurried steps, the fine tendrils of light which had been seeping through the woven material of the bag over my head lessened, and we were now descending. The air was cooler, the light almost non-existent. I'd stopped struggling a little, hoping they would ease up on their tight grip. So far, though, Elowyn and her hunch dudes were staying diligent. If anything, their grips were getting tighter, which was more discomfort to add to my pain.
Hurry!
Elowyn's cold voice echoed around, sounding creepy as hell. From the muted echo of their footsteps, I guessed that they were leading me down into an area of stone.
The distraction will only work for so long before they realize it isn't actually the Dweller.
What distraction? I tried to scream out again, but the gag was wedged in my mouth crazy good, and my chest was also trying to splinter into a million pieces, which made doing anything difficult. Tears ran down my cheeks, soaking into the fabric surrounding my head. I knew that I needed to stop crying before my mouth filled with liquid and I suffocated, but the pain was so intense that my tears continued to fall without any hope of stopping them. The descent leveled out after a few more steps, and whoever held me let me go, flinging me easily across the room. All of the air was knocked out of me when I hit the floor, skidding a few feet across the stones, pain now screaming up my back and sides. It fit in well with the chest pain. They were all friends coming together for a little pain party. It had been hard enough to breathe through my gag, but the blow to my body had me gasping and wriggling around like a dying dweller, probably something I was about to become. Forcing myself to calm, trying my best to ignore the pain, I focused myself on the simple task of getting air into my lungs. Simple and easy. In and out. Except, of course, my attackers were still in the room,
and they were so not done with me yet. The bag was ripped off my head, and since I